Okay, are we ready to go, Janet?
Yep, let's start. Welcome, everyone. This is Janet. Welcome to the final session of our 2013 Accessible Technology Webinar Series. I'm Janet Peters. I'm the coordinator for the Great Lakes ADA Center. The Accessible Technology Webinar Series is sponsored by the Great Lakes ADA Center and the Pacific ADA Center. Both are members of the ADA National Network. The ADA National Network is comprised of 10 regional centers funded by the National Institute on Disability and Rehabilitation Research. Just a couple of housekeeping items before we start. This session is being recorded and will be available to you on the Accessible Technology webinar site. This session does have real-time captioning available, and you can select that by the main menu window, show closed captioning, or by pressing Control F8. The captioning window is movable, and you can set the size of the text and the background color and customize it to your needs. And so that is available to you. We will be taking questions at the end of this session, so up until that point your chat feature will not be available, but there will be plenty of time for questions at the end of the session, and that will happen through the chat area, and I will release the chat when the question answer time is upon us. So with that, let's get started. Today's session is part two of our PDF accessibility webinars we've been doing, and this one will be focusing on PDF forms and tables. We are extremely pleased to have our one of our favorite speakers, Christy Blue, with us. Christy is an IT accessibility specialist at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. She has over 15 years of experience in developing and using internet technologies to deliver information to people and has been working with IT accessibility in education for over 10 years. Christy is part of the IT Access Initiative at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and that initiative focuses on awareness, evaluation, and education of the accessibility of electronic information. Her online and classroom training sessions include accessibility with Word, PowerPoint, and PDF, and we have had her as a speaker for the Accessible Technology webinar series before. Christy holds a master's in technology and a certificate in computer science from Eastern Illinois University, and we are very pleased to have her. And with that, I will turn it over to you, Christy, to start.
Thank you, Janet. And it is good to be back again. I almost get a little sad if I thought I wouldn't be able to come and teach something to everyone. So I appreciate everybody that has logged in with us today. Looks like we're filling in, and as always, I know within the first 5 minutes of the session, at least 20 more people will log in with us. As Janet said, I am here at the University of Illinois, and at the end of the session, I will have a slide with my contact information. So if you're unable to get a question to us during the question and answer session, feel free to contact me via email with any questions you have from today or later on. We are going to do a little advanced accessible PDF today, so if you're coming into this session, you should already have an idea of elements with PDF in regards to like tagging, doing alt text, some of the simple things. And we do have those available. I think they're in the archives, and Janet will provide a link at some point for those to go back and review those sessions. With that, though, I would like to go ahead and just give a little background of PDF. PDF was a format created in 1993, and the great thing about PDF was you could take a document and now you could have it electronically and then print it, and it never lost that visual formatting that it had. PDF was designed to be scalable, and as well, it was not natively accessible. It was essentially an online printer in a way. So the concept of an accessible PDF was never a thought. Some of the ways that we get PDFs is we scan them from a print document. When I worked at Eastern Illinois University, I worked in an office where we had all the hiring files came through. So we had almost 50 years of hiring files that we would put on a scanner, scan it, save it as PDF. And of course, at that time, we were saving them as images in PDF, and we've learned since that's not the way to do it. Other ways that we get PDFs is a save as or a converted to PDF from another program, maybe from Word or InDesign. We print to PDF, and sometimes we just end up with PDFs. We have no access to the original document. You may work in an office and you get it by email, or you come in and they say, well, here's all of our files, and they're all PDF. So PDF files coming from different areas can create a lot of accessibility questions. Now, the things that are addressed in the basic PDF accessibility webinars and the quick checks talks about things as whether your PDF has text in it or if it is a scanned image, the concept of tags, which this is how an accessible technology device would be able to read things such as headings, your paragraphs, your lists, the alt text, is that tagging structure. As well, looking at in that basic class, heading structures, text descriptions, and reading orders. So those items in itself are good steps if you're just starting with PDF accessibility. If you can get those five items, you really are kind of ahead of the game. But one of the things that a lot of PDFs is what we find here on campus are used for are interactive forms. And then as well, you have PDFs that have a lot of data tables in them. I often encourage people, if they are using PDF for forms, to try not to use PDF. One of the things that you run into, and I think you'll be able to see this as we go through the session, is there's a lot of time involved in regards to doing forms. And once you get that set up and it's accessible and you're all ready to go, then if you have one change to that document, you pretty much have to start from scratch. So we often encourage people, if they can move forms out of PDF and into like an HTML format, to go for that option. And a lot of times PDF forms are used because they're looking for a certain look of the form. They have a lot of information. They want it all to fit on one page, things like that. And so with data tables, you're going to have the same rules in which you're going to have in an HTML environment. And this is including heading cells and data cells and making sure those match up. So those are the two things that we're going to look at today. Of course, you could spend days just talking about PDF accessibility, but we don't often have an opportunity to take more looks at forms and the data tables. So with that, we're just going to go ahead and jump right into this. I have a lot of screenshots, and we are going to this presentation today off of the PowerPoints. We're not going to be doing any application sharing or things like that. I've tried to be pretty specific in how I explain things, and again, save your questions for the end and we can go back and pick up if I miss something. My screenshots are from Acrobat 11. Now, in Acrobat 10, the whole entire interface of the program changed, and this is Acrobat Pro. 11 actually has upgraded some of the kind of housekeeping features in regards to accessibility, and for an individual like me that's doing a lot of remediation, I'm very happy with the new version. So if you're on an older version and trying to decide whether to upgrade, if you are working with accessibility and PDFs, I would go ahead and look at upgrading up to 11 or XI. We're into the Roman numerals now. So in that newer setup, what you have is up at the top on the right hand side, you have three menu choices. You have tools, and it has assign and comment. Most everything you're going to need in regards to accessibility is under this tools menu. So to activate our form editing environment, so we'll click on tools, We'll click on Forms and then select Edit. And if you haven't done anything with your document, you're going to get this little pop-up box that says currently there are no form fields in PDF. Do you want Acrobat to detect the form fields for you? This is kind of personal choice, and as well, it's kind of dependent on how extensive your form is. Now, the one that I used here when I was doing this presentation just is a couple text boxes and some check boxes. So I actually could have clicked yes here. And Acrobat does a pretty good job of figuring out where there needs to be a form element. So that's kind of a user preference, whether you want to have it do that or not. Most times I click no because I just have a little OCD and I want to do it all by myself. So in regards to form elements, you'll see in there that there are several form elements to choose from, but most of the basic form elements are either a text box, so that's your fill in the blank, things that you would find under, like, you know, a name field or things like that. Your check boxes and radio boxes are usually the two that are used. With the text fields. Now your difference, some people don't understand there really is a difference in check boxes and radio buttons, and I kind of compare this to do when you're doing list items in a Word document. Once upon a time, I really didn't understand the difference between ordered list and unordered list. It's just I got tired of using bullets for a while, so I'll start putting numbers, and after I got tired of numbers, I started putting bullets. And sometimes people want to do that with checkboxes and radio boxes. They're like, well, I want my form element to look like a square, so I'm going to use a checkbox. Or I want it to be a circle, so I'm going to use a radio box. But there really is a difference. So use checkboxes when you want to be able to select one or more options from a list of elements. Radio boxes or radio buttons would be only selecting one item from multiple options. So this might be, you know, a yes, no, or not applicable type choice where they can only select one, where your check boxes may be, you know, which of these colors apply, and they could choose one or they could choose all four. So once you get past that initial, whether you want to have Adobe fill in your elements or if you want to do it, you're in what's called the form editing mode. And in here, it gives you several tasks, but the ones we'll be looking at is, the main one is adding new field. As well, if you have a document you're continuing to work on, you can go back and select the edit field. And I always, and this is one thing that's changed between 10 and 11, is where the close form editing button is. So it's now located at the top of that sidebar area. So what we'll do is just kind of walk through how you would add a form element. And this would be the same no matter what your element is. Our screenshots here are using a text field. So what I'll do is once I have my form editing mode going, I'm going to select add a field, and from there it gives me a drop down, and you can see here in the screenshot that the different type of elements it gives you, a text field, a checkbox, radio button, list box drop down, buttons, digital signatures, and barcodes. So you have a lot of options you can do here. When you select an item, and in here we're going to select the text field, over in your main document area, it kind of gives you kind of a shadowed outline of what that element is. And you can line that up wherever you want to put it. And it even gives you some little ruler guides to place that. Once you've placed that, so once you get where you're at, you just hit enter, and then it gives you the stronger bounding box that you're used to seeing with form elements. It will also pop up a little miniature area where you can put your field name in. And we'll talk about what that is here in a second. But on that box, the bottom right-hand corner, it has a link to go to all properties. And this is where you want to end up in regards to your form fields. Now, once again, when you're working on forms, you'll find that you have your own style and system. When I do forms, sometimes if it's a simple form like this one here that I was creating for the presentation, only had 6 or 8 form elements. So I went in and I put all my form elements in first, and then I went back and worked on the properties. A form I helped our health service with here on campus had 70 form elements between different check boxes and these type of items. So on those, I worked the full properties on them one by one to make sure I didn't miss anything. So when you add your field, just as the steps here, select which item you're going to add, place it on your document, select enter, and then either selecting all properties or go to your next field. So the key with form elements, there's two key areas to keep in mind to make this accessible. Accessible technology or assistive technology will identify a form field from the tooltip. And this is because most assistive technologies, for example, screen readers, when they are reading this, go into a form reading environment. It actually changes the mode of their assistive technology. With that, what it is just reading the form elements that are on the page. So it doesn't pick up, although we visually see that in front of this text box, it says name, that's not going to pick it up unless it is built into the form element. So for that, they use the tooltip feature. So on this screenshot, this is from our little text box that we just placed. So in name, the first item, and all your form fields need to have a name and a tooltip. Your name is your unique identifier. Assistive technology doesn't care what you put in there. Usually, you know, you put something similar to what your form field name is, but you could put numbers in there. You could put random letters. The only thing to remember is if you duplicate this, so if I have two form elements on my page and both of them have the name ABC, when I fill out the first one, it will duplicate in the second one. Now, some forms, that's really nice. If you have a multiple form and you'd like the name to carry over into multiple pages. But be aware of that, because sometimes we might do copy and paste, things like that, to make it easier on placing form elements. So you want to make sure all your name items are unique. Sometimes when you're using tooltips, you might have to actually pull a full question in. I'm looking here, checking my other slides here. So one of the things is how we can check for our tooltips. So I'm going to kind of slow down here and go back and do a little review of just what I shared with you. So a tooltip is exactly that. A tooltip is what you get if you're in a reading mode, regular mode of your PDF, and you put your cursor over a non-text element. So for here, this is forms, or in the other sessions, we talk about putting your cursor over like a graphic, and you get that little box that pops up and tells you something about it. Sometimes you'll see this on websites with alt text. If you have that setting in your browser activated, when you roll over an item, the little box pops up and tells you about it. So this is one way to tell you you do have a tooltip associated. You want to make sure that your tooltip explains, in regards to form elements, explains what you need them to fill out. So on a simple form where it's their name and address, city, state, zip, those are pretty simple. But when you get into having check boxes, on here, the screenshot here, and this screenshot, of course, is just to show the tooltip, but if we just put a tooltip in there of to match the item, associates, bachelor's, and master's, a person with assistive technology may not understand, well, what am I supposed to be checking here? Am I supposed to be checking if I have this degree, if I don't have this degree, am I interested in getting this degree? So you want to be sure that if the only thing that existed on that page were the form elements, they would know what to fill out. So you see the tool tip for this one is, have you earned an associate's? So actually we pulled part of the question or even kind of created our own specific question to go with that. The other ones may be, have you earned a bachelor's, have you earned a master's? So tooltips can get a little long and lengthy, but you have to remember that as a visual user, you can see the surrounding text with that. You know what answer the person is looking for. Now, an individual using assistive technology can change out of that kind of visual mode and go in and read the text around there. But it's providing them, by using the tooltip, it's providing them an easier way to get that information. One of the other things with forms is the order. And this goes the same way with reading order in a regular document. You want to be sure that your form elements, if you were to tab through the document, match the logical reading order of the document. Now, most times, a form is going to be read top to bottom, left to right. Where this may be different is if you have multiple forms where you have used tables for layout. Maybe you have columns where there's different choices in throughout the columns, and you actually need the reading order to go differently than that top to bottom, left to right. And the way we do this is in that tools toolbar over there on that right hand side, there is an area when you're in the forms called fields, and if we expand that, it'll show us, just like you would see if you're in the tags panel or the order reading panel, every element on there. So the thing here is being able to match up the order with the form element. And so this screenshot here is just kind of connecting the form element to where it shows up on that sidebar. And you can see that these actually do all match up, which means I did good for the first round. Sometimes it may not match up, depending on how you build your form, how you put your form elements in. You may end up with some things out of order. And the way to change that is very easily. In that list, you can do a drag and drop. So you would place your mouse on the form element on that sidebar that you need to move, hold down your left mouse key, and drag it where it needs to go in the order. Let's give you all a breathing second there if anybody's taking notes. And of course, these slides will all be available. So if we're flying through them, don't worry. You'll be able to go back and review this again. So what we have here is kind of a little flow chart of adding and editing form elements. So our first thing we want to do is we want to open up the form editing mode, and we go through that from tools, form, and either create or edit. Once in that editing mode, we select our item that we are wanting to put on our document. We place that element, and once it's placed, we go into the full properties view and make sure that we add that tooltip. And then from there, we check our tab order of our form elements. The thing about form elements when you're coming in from other documents is you have to do them all in PDF. I know you can do form elements in Word. I know you can do them in some of the other word processing programs, and you can have a document that looks amazing. You have your boxes right where they want to go, and check boxes and radio boxes. When you convert that to PDF, it will convert over as a graphic. So instead of having these interactive text boxes, you have a graphic of a colored square or rectangle. So that's one of the downsides. Luckily, PDF, you know, they will bring a lot of content structure over as far as headings and list elements, alt text, and even with that, sometimes it gets crazy because, especially like from Microsoft Word, if you export to PDF on a PC, it will maintain a lot of your tagging structure. If you export the PDF from a Mac, you have nothing. So we're still trying to decide if that's an Adobe issue or if that is a Microsoft issue or if that's a PC versus Mac issue. But that there is some craziness in there. So if you're going to be working with forms, just keep that in mind that you will be building them in PDF. That can save you a little bit of work on the native document side. So other items and form elements to think about is in that properties box, and I'm going to go back a couple slides here to one where I have that. Okay, so this is the screenshot with the properties box, and you'll see up at the top. Now, this is the one associated with the text field. So this is like your name, address, those type of fields. Several tabs at the top. Now, when you have a checkbox or a radio button, you will also want to click on the tab that says options. And I apologize, I don't have a screenshot of that item, because that's where you're going to put in your choice. One of the questions you need to ask yourself when using a PDF for a form is this a form you're having somebody fill out and then print off, or fill out an email? You know, is this an interactive form just because I want an interactive form? Or is this information that I'm going to have a button at the bottom and they're going to click on and this is going to load into a database? Again, if that's your route, especially with loading information into a database, I would highly suggest going with an HTML type environment. If you are loading information into a database, that's where you want to make sure you have these options filled out, because that's the information that will go into the database. So our example where we had bachelor's, associates, and master's, if you have it filled out in that options tab and put in there those elements, you might get in your results choice 1, choice 2, choice 3, instead of associates, bachelor's, and master's. So that's just kind of a little bit to remember. Other things that you can do on with the forms that is not necessarily an accessible type thing, but it does make your documents look cleaner. You'll see that there's an appearance tab. And in that appearance tab, you can say, do I want my form element boxes to have a border? Do I want them shaded? How big do I want the text? When somebody types an element in there, if it is a text field, do I want to be multi-line? Do I want to be single-lined? So there are some additional type formatting features that you can put in there. Of course, those would be for the visual environment, not so much for accessibility. Even when you're being accessible, it's okay to still keep it pretty. Okay, so let's jump up and talk a little bit about tables. And when I was developing this, I sat and I thought, well, wow, I'm going to spend a whole lot of time on forms, and then there's tables, and tables are really easy. But the reality of it is tables are probably a lot harder than form elements. Once you get down the process of how to put in a form element, adding that tooltip, and checking the order, then it becomes a simple process. Tables, on the other hand, get crazy because you have simple tables, and you have complex tables, and you have merged cells sometimes, and then you might have a heading row in the middle of a table. So tables can actually cause you a lot of nightmares. We're going to talk here more kind of on the simple tables, just so you can understand the process. And then I have an example of a small complex table. But I think you'll be able to see just how quickly tables can get insane. Now, with tables should only be used to represent data, especially once you come into the PDF environment. Where you run into problems with tables in your tagging structure is if you have used tables for layout, which is fine. If you're working, for example, in a Word document or an InDesign document and you need information to be set up in a certain way so everything fits on one page, a lot of times you will use tables or columns and things like that to get it all set. When you export to PDF, if you have used a table for layout, PDF thinks, oh, you have created a table. It does not know the difference between a data table and a layout table. So, and I guess, this is where we say you need to have a little bit of knowledge in accessible PDF coming into this, is be aware that if you have that table structure might transfer over. So probably one of the first things you would want to do is go through and check your tagging structure to make sure if you have a table, it really is, if you have a table in your tags, it really is a data table and it's not a layout table. And then clean that up before you start. So just as in HTML, our table rules are pretty simple. All tables must have at least a heading row in them. And then tables with a heading row and a heading column, which that's the table we're going to use in our examples here, must use IDs to identify the cells. And where IDs come from is this idea of visually, I can tell this cell that's right in the middle of the table, or I can tell that belongs to this column and this row. If you don't have those visual cues to line up that cell, there has to be a way that you can coordinate that information. So each heading cell will end up having an ID to it. And this identifier then ties into those data cells. So assistive technology, just like it had this little virtual form mode, also has a tables mode. And by setting that information up, a non-visual user can tell that when they're in a cell that says 36, they know exactly what that is relation to in that row and that column. So in Acrobat Pro, there actually is a table editor, and this is activated by having your touch-up reading order panel active, and that's your panel that you use when you're doing tagging or checking tags. You can open that either from the order panel. You can also open that from the tools toolbar, and then choosing accessibility, and then choosing reading order panel. So in that mode, your tables are noted with a big X through them. In this screenshot, you can kind of see a little bit of how a table is represented. Now in Acrobat 11, and this is a change from 10 that I am very excited about, in the touch-up reading order panel towards the bottom, you can make a selection so that when the elements show up in your document, it either shows them as with the little numbers, and that's what you've seen in previous versions of Acrobat, that is taken from the order panel, and so you have these gray boxes with 1, 2, 3, 4, and essentially they're useless because with assistive technology, it follows the order of the tags panel. So in Acrobat 11, they now have a choice that you can change that from showing the reading order to showing the element name. And so as you can see in the screenshot, you can see where in previous versions we would have had numbers. Here we have the paragraph elements. So that's a great feature. It's also a great feature if you're going through and doing a quick check on your document to activate that mode, and you can look through and see quickly what is a header, what is a paragraph, what is a list, what is a table, in a lot quicker fashion. So with the touch-up reading order panel activated, we're going to go over to where our table element is, place our cursor anywhere on that element, and right-click to bring up our submenu, and select Table Editor. So we're going to see a lot of visual changes when it comes to working with the tables. So in this screenshot on our page right now, you see it's just the general squared with an X through it that tells you this is a table. Once you activate the table editor, your cells are going to highlight, and you can go in and change what colors are used to highlight these cells. On mine, it's the default is generally gray, means that it's a table data cell. On mine, it's set that yellow is a table heading cell. So this screenshot is actually a couple different cells, and I can see, oh, they're all gray, which means even though I know there's heading cells there, Acrobat's saying, nope, these are all data cells. So I know one of my first rules is, well, I have to have heading cells in my table. So what you can easily do here is you click on, place your mouse in one of the cells and right click on it. I placed my mouse up in the top left hand corner in the name cell that says name, right clicked, and it says table cell properties. And that opens up me the properties box where I can select, is this a heading cell or is this a data cell? So this is one of the easy ways you can identify your cell types. Once you activate that editor, you can visually look at there and see the differences, and as well you can open up the properties for each cell and see what it says. Now I know that I need to change these cells to heading cells. And this is one of those things again that goes back to what order do you want to do this. There'll be additional information that we need to add in each cell. So some people like to change cells one by one as they work through a table. For me, I like to get just the set, the base set, and then go from here. So one of the other changes in Acrobat 11 is you can change multiple cells at one time. So we have six columns by five rows. So normally I would need to go each cell. I'd do the name cell, then the place, then the bib number. And by the way, these are results from our women's wheelchair racers from the Boston Marathon. And Tatiana McFadden, which you've probably heard a lot in the news, she took four major marathons this year. So they get a little bit of a shout out through our presentation today. So one thing that I did is I selected all my cells that I knew were header cells. I selected right click to get table cell properties, and then I changed that to a header cell. When I clicked OK, you'll see in the bottom part of that screenshot there's actually a visual difference now. I have cells that are in yellow and I have cells that are in gray. And what that tells me is, okay, my header cells are correctly marked as heading cells and my data cells are properly marked as data cells. So that's the easy part of doing tables. Now's where it starts getting a little crazy. And if you've worked with tables in an HTML environment, again, the principles and the rules are, they're almost parallel. The concepts are the same. You need to have IDs and, you know, your headers and data cells. So the process is there. Just sometimes takes a little bit to get it figured out. So what I need to do is I need to give each heading cell, or TH, table heading cell, a unique identifier. Now, this can be, just as with our names that we were giving our form elements, this could be anything I want to make up. As an identifier, that's all it is. It's not going to be read by the assistive technology. It's going to be used in the algorithms to associate cells. So you could use 123, ABC, anything you want. But in the ID box on the cell properties, this is where you can put this information. I like to make it something similar to what the cell is because that makes it it makes it easier to go on and associate things here, as I'm going to show you how you're going to do next. So what I would do is I right-clicked on my heading cell for Tatiana. I clicked on table cell properties. And down about the middle of the box, there is a fill-in area. It says ID. And I just typed Tatiana in there. And then I would do this for the remainder of my heading cells. I'd go to Amanda's, and I would put her ID in, and I'm just using their first names as Amanda, then Susanna, then Jill. Across the top, I would continue to do the same thing with place, bib, time, half, and finish. So each heading cell now has a unique identifier with it. Now, one of the things we need to do is you need to associate every cell with a heading, with the heading it goes to. And I know there's probably some of you sitting there right now going, wow, this sounds really time consuming. And the only thing I can tell you is, yes, it really is. Again, if you have opportunities to take documents that have this type of information in them and put them into an HTML environment, I always highly suggest that. Nothing against PDFs, and you know, the existence of PDFs gives me a lot of job security, but from the end user's viewpoint and workload, when you start getting into these complex items such as forms and tables, and especially if your tables become very complex, really trying to move out of that PDF environment is something to look at. So what we have to do now is we have to associate each one of our cells to the header. So where we have here in our screenshot, Tatiana took first place. So we have a cell with a number 1 in it. If we did not associate these elements, the screen reader would just get the information of 1, and they wouldn't know, well, what does that mean? Is that first place? Is that a time? Is that the first participant? What does this 1 mean? So again, we're going to use our table properties. So I'm going to place my mouse in that cell with the 1. I'm going to right click and select table cell properties. And this one be a little different because this is a data cell. So I would, of course, I know that because it's gray, but I can double check that again in the properties. And down towards the bottom, on the right-hand side of that box, there's 2 buttons. 1 is a plus and 1 is a minus. When I click on the plus or the add button, a secondary box is going to pop up. It's going to give me a drop-down menu with every one of the headers, the header IDs that I just created. So I know that this cell is associated with the place column and with Tatiana's row. So I go through and I'll select place from that list and click OK. I'll click on the add button again and I'll go through that list and I'll find Tatiana and I will click OK. And then in the bottom part of that screenshot, you'll now see that that fills into the properties box. So now this cell is associated with those 2 heading items. So now when assistive technology picks up that number 1, it's going to know that that is that Tatiana had gotten first place. So I would click OK. And then I would do this for the remainder of the cells in the data table. And again, yes, it is time consuming. I'm just having this vision of people who might have their heads in their hands at this moment. Some are probably shaking their heads. Others may be actually logging off the webinar at this point and running. But don't be discouraged on this. I figured out how to do it, and if I could figure it out, you guys can figure it out. So it's just remembering your step-by-steps. Now, one of the things that you're going to want to do also is go and check your table in your tag structure. For simple tables like the one we've been working with here, it does come out pretty clean and matches up pretty well, but if you know from checking your reading order using the tags panel, you know you can click on a tag and it will highlight over in the document. Our screenshot here just shows an expanded tags tree, and you can see is when selecting on the TH element for name, I can tell from that tag that, okay, it is a heading, and it does highlight the correct associated thing in the document. And then you can just arrow down through your tags panel to make sure everything is matching up. This is actually really helpful with complex tables, which I have an example, some screenshots to show here in a few minutes. But sometimes when you go to do a table, there may be an empty cell in your table, or Acrobat may actually put empty cells in your table. So this actually showing you the number of table headers, your number of table cells, is parallel to the actual document. A complex tables, and I'm just going to briefly touch on these, and then that should bring us close to about the getting into close to the 2 o'clock hour, and I'm leaving quite a bit of time for questions today, just because I know that these are areas that can pose a lot of different questions. But so going back and using, we just took our table we were using earlier for our women wheelchair racers, and we just added on the guys, giving it a new first column, which of course has merged cells in it. Another time you may see a lot of merged cells would be on a type of application. A lot of times data that's used in an application form, statistics, things like this. So on the left-hand side is actually what our table should look like. Or excuse me, on the left-hand side, and you see we have merged cells. On the right side, this is how it converted over from Microsoft Word. So by activating the table editor, we can see that something just doesn't seem to match up. There's a couple white spaces in there. It doesn't really look like anything's merged. I'm not even sure if there's a correct number of cells that would be tagged as versus the table. And with your more complex tables, this is maybe what you get. And you sometimes even see this with the simple tables. So our next two screenshots, well, it's looking a little better. And the way we were able to get here is sometimes, especially with complex tables, your best bet might be to go in and re-tag it. If you're coming, like, for these screenshots, I made the table in Microsoft Word. I exported it to PDF. I let the powers that be do the tagging, and it didn't look very good. So then I went into my tags panel and actually just cleared the whole page structure, cleared the document structure, and then grabbed the information of this table and selected table from the touch-up reading order panel. And got it a little bit closer. I can see that it is picking up my heading column, my heading rows. There is something kind of weird there towards the bottom. I'm not sure what that is, you know, at first glance, but I'm like, okay. But at least it's looking a little closer to what I'm wanting. The best thing to do with complex tables at this point is go into your tagging structure. And so that's what I did. We went back and just compared each tag to each cell. And what I realized in that one on the left, you can see down there at the bottom, almost looks like there's a second yellow, a second yellow box over the top of it. And there really was. In the tag structure, it was almost reading as two tables on top of each other. So what I did is I deleted those extra TH and TD elements, went back and double checked to see if everything was lining up, and then we get the screenshot of what we have on the right side. So by comparing it to the tags, to start cleaning it up that way, now I have, I can see that the men's and the women's, those two cells which are supposed to be merged, are merged. And everything that's supposed to be a heading cell is a heading cell, and what is supposed to be a data cell is a data cell. From that, I would start at this point going in and having to put in my identifiers for each of the heading cells and then matching them up. Now the difference we would have here versus our simple table, for example, if we go down to the women's again and we choose Tatiana, when I choose that first column for time, I would choose the heading ID for time. I would choose the heading ID for Tatiana, which is what we did in the last one, but I would also now choose the heading ID for women's. So I've now added a third identifier. So when assistive technology gets to that cell for that time, it knows that it is time, they know it belongs to Tatiana, and they also know that she's from the women's category versus the men's category. Now one of the things that has shown up in here, and I kind of debated where to put this slide in, is this idea of merged cells. So if you're working in a table and you need to merge some cells, because that is an option to do, you know, if your table structure is perfect except for like, ooh, these two cells right here need to be merged, that can easily be done in your table cell properties. And what you have here in the middle of the attributes, you have row span and column span. And that's what you do for your merging of cells. So I activated that merge cell for men, which actually spanned 11 rows. And you can see in the screenshot in the properties that it's 11. Now, if for some reason that wouldn't have come out right and it was only spanning 10 rows and then I had an extra cell, I would have chose, you know, make sure I chose all cells that needed to be merged together and then went in and made that that adjustment. So you can do merge cells, and with that as well, if you end up with cells that have merged, for example, if we actually had a third category in that first column, so instead of spanning 11 rows, I needed one group to span 8 rows, one group to span 3, I would just change that number in there. It takes a little bit of work, but you can get it to go out the way you need to do it. One of the other ways that you can work with tables is you can go through the tagging panel through the touch-up reading order panel, and you can tag individual cells. So you can build a table from scratch from the tags panel. In earlier versions of Acrobat, that sometimes was the best way to go, especially with complex tables. Newer versions of Acrobat seem to do much better on guessing merged cells and trying to take a guess on heading cells and things like that. So Acrobat really has made some great strides in regards to some of their editing features and the accessibility of things such as forms and tables. One of the things is don't get discouraged. This is a lot of information for just two principles. These would be the two items that are going to take you the longest when it comes to dealing with PDFs. It will take time to figure it out. You know, there is a learning curve. You may find that you have to do it more than once, whether that is because you do it and then you check it and you have to go back and redo it, or many times you do it, then somebody above you makes a change to your form and you come back in and you have to start from scratch. Sometimes you may be working on this and find that you're using a lot of inappropriate language, yelling at your computer. For me, my office is in the basement. This really works to my advantage some days. But the thing is, don't get discouraged because you can do it. There are a lot of options. There are a lot of additional resources out there. WebAIM has some great tutorials. Adobe is continually updating their tutorials. YouTube, you can always find videos step by step. So the resources are growing as well to help in regards to doing these things. As I said, you know, you can always contact me and I'll be glad to point you towards some resources or give you any tips that I can. I've sat down with somebody one time and done some kind of application sharing and just went through the steps, and by them just watching it happen in front of them, they're like, oh, okay, I understand this now. So don't let it scare you off. But you know, these are kind of those next steps in the world of PDF. And hopefully as Adobe continues to move forward in their commitment to accessibility, they will continue to also work with some of the other products out there to make it a little easier that the end products, we don't have to do as much to them to make them accessible. With that, we have quite a bit of time here left for some questions, so I will turn the mic back over to Janet to click the button for the chat box. And again, up here is my contact information. And I hope that we didn't fry too many brains today, but I appreciate everybody that has hung in there with us for this far. Janet?
Okay, thank you. I think we can do it, right, everyone? this is good information. I'm going to uncheck the chat box so you now have the ability to write your question in the chat area. One question that did come through, Christy, that you can answer right away, is the table that you were demonstrating, was that created in Excel or Word, or what application was that created in?
Okay, excellent question. That actually, originally the table was out HTML, and I put it in a Word document. I just did a copy and paste into a Word document and then exported to PDF.
Okay, excellent. I'm looking in the chat window. I think that you're all able to chat if there are any questions. I did share this earlier, but I'm going to share it again because this was an advanced session for PDF, but we do have the archive of Christy's first PDF presentation with the Accessible Technology webinar series, which was Quick Checks for PDF, and that's a really good webinar to if you're newer to PDF accessibility. And then last in September, we did a session on PDF accessibility, starting with your native application, really how you make it accessible in Word and then transfer it. So in the chat box, I'm going to put those two links up. And then I have seen that there was a question. Okay. And Christy, I'll ask the question so the captioner catches it. Is there any real world reason as to why we would choose to do a PDF form rather than a web form?
That is an excellent question. A lot of people will choose to do a PDF form because it's something they're going to print out. An example of this is I work a lot with our financial aid office. They have a lot of forms that have a lot of information on them, so they try to pack it all into one document. You know, people can fill it out in this PDF environment, print it off, sign it, turn it in. And that's generally the scenario we find with PDF forms. You know, I will continue, yes, as much as I work with PDF, I will continue to always advocate for move forms out of PDF and put them in the web environment. Sometimes there is security issues. The form that I talked about for our medical center, a lot of HIPAA type information on there. So it's what are you wanting to do with the form afterwards? And a lot of people choose PDF because they're looking for a certain look to the form when it is printed.
Okay, that's a good answer. Another question that's come in is, Is there any guidance for creators to keep in mind with PDF accessibility regarding speech recognition users as opposed to screen reader users?
I think you're pretty much okay. The principles would work with the assistive technology in the same way. I think the main thing you'd want to make sure there is making sure especially that your tab orders. So as they're jumping from one element to the next, the commands that they're giving that to go there, it's going where they want it to go.
Okay. On slide 25, would gender also have to be identified as an ID or just men or women?
I'm going to jump down. That was the complex table, wasn't it? 24, 25. Oh, okay. You could go ahead and identify gender as an ID there. You wouldn't really be associating it with anything, but you could go ahead and give that an ID element of gender. Good question.
Yeah. Good questions, everyone. Keep them coming. The next question is not about PDFs per se, but are PowerPoints, PPTs, used for this presentation accessible by screen reader? It's okay if they're not. I'm just looking for some models. And so I guess that one's more directed towards us at the Great Lakes Center. And yes, the PowerPoints used within Blackboard are accessible to screen readers. Blackboard Collaborate, which is the web platform we're on, uses a bridge tool to allow access for screen readers, and all the PowerPoint information is in an activity window that's accessible for a screen reader. So that's a good question, Jerry, and we are in the 2000, just to make a shameless plug here, in the 2014 Accessible Technology webinar series, our first session in January will be talking about how to create an accessible webinar. That's that.
And just for my addition to that, like if I was to send you my PowerPoint, I made sure that, you know, I've used slide titles on every slide. All of the non-text elements have alternate text with them. So, you know, even if I was to send you my raw PowerPoint file, it would be accessible by the screen reader.
Yep, that's a good point. Next question, do you have an opinion of LiveCycle?
Is that even still around? If I'm thinking of the correct program, is that the one where you can actually build your form? It's the Adobe product that you can build forms in and then export them out? Okay. Seen as a yes. You know, I haven't ever used it. I do know some individuals that do. With no matter where your document is coming from, whether it's coming from LiveCycle into PDF, you still need to go and do these type of checks. And you would think, since LiveCycle is an Adobe product and that PDF is an Adobe product, it would jump back and forth nicely. It doesn't always do that, and a very good example of it not doing that as well is Adobe InDesign, which they have added a lot of accessibility type features to now. Still does not always export into PDF very good. I hope that answered that question on LiveCycle.
Yep, and if you type a follow-up question, that's perfectly acceptable. The next question is, do you have resources for creating an accessible PowerPoint, which Christy mentioned she produces her PowerPoint slides in an accessible manner. We do at the Great Lakes ADA Center have resources available, but Christy, I'll let you share what you have as well.
Oh, you know, I was just thinking maybe that's the session I need to do next year. we have some that we did back a few years ago. Actually, I think they were all based on Office 2007. There are some basic principles, for example, using your slide titles, using the use the templates that come in PowerPoint, and making sure that your non-text elements have text descriptions or alt text. Beyond that, you know, I haven't done a whole lot with PowerPoint these last couple of years, but you know, those basic principles there, I always try to make sure that I stick to those. Probably what they have there at Great Lakes is even a little more expansive, since I haven't done a whole lot with it in the last couple of years.
Yeah, we have done a session in the past, so if you look at the archives on the Accessible Technology webinar site, there was a session on PowerPoint, and you can always contact the Great Lakes ADA Center as well, and we can send you some additional resources. Any further questions? Okay. Okay. Go on.
I can put a question out there.
Go ahead.
Uh-huh. I'm just curious how many people have worked with forms, working with to make them accessible, or had to work with the table editors. You know, is this new to a lot of people, or I know we still have several people logged in. Because I know here on our campus here at the U of I, a lot of people use PDF forms, and a lot of people have tables in their PDFs, but when it comes to the accessibility of it, it really is new territory. But then again, you know, I'm here on a small campus, so I don't know if this is new information or helpful information for our attendees today. Okay.
Good.
Oh, this wonderful
feedback.
Yeah,
I think
Thank
it was
you,
excellent
everybody.
Information. I think I'm going to look for any last questions. If not, just to give you a few logistics, this webinar, as we mentioned, is recorded and will be posted at the Accessible Technology webinar site, which is up on the screen here. You will receive an email with an evaluation for today's session. We do take your evaluations very seriously, and that's how we plan for the next upcoming sessions. And Christy shared her contact information with you, and as always, feel free to contact Christy or the Great Lakes ADA Center, and we'll try to answer your questions or give you some referral information. And I think that concludes our session for today, and thank you everyone for your participation and information sharing your attention with us. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.